Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey, don't record me.
I mean, like, with a story like that, how can you not? Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how are you doing tonight?
I am sleepy.
You know, I feel like you're always exhausted when we record at the late, late hour of 4 p.m.
Yeah, I've just been doing a lot of brain stuff today. So my brain sleeps need to happen because otherwise not good work they are.
Bell brain think not he is doing
me not word good now.
Yes, no, I that is clear. Well, that's great. At least you don't have to, you know, record a podcast. I think
hey, you know what, I'm just, Shang-Chi was exciting enough to wake me out of my brain fog.
That's true, man. We are going to be talking about Shang-Chi this episode, of course, on the most unnecessary show on the internet. That's right. It's two guys talking about movies, talking about comic books, talking about comic book movies. And we have got a comic book movie for you today. I'm really excited to talk about this one with you, man. I walked out of the theater. Like, the first thing I wanted to do was record. And man, I am just super stoked. But first, we got to let the good people know that this show would not happen without their support at patreon.com/TV Talk. So if you would like to help make this show happen, that's the place to go to do it. Again, that's patreon.com/TV Talk. By the way, we have got some special announcements coming your way early October. So stick around. Stick around, I guess, in a couple of weeks. I mean, don't hang out here. Just watch the feed. You know what? Just tune into the podcast.
Stare at your phone for the next several weeks.
Yeah. Just camp out by it. Whatever the equivalent is camping out by your phone. That's what you go, that's what
go
you
to
do.
The go to the podcast store and camp out in front of it.
That's right.
They're podcast stores, right? Physical locations.
There should be. I had a studio. It was called a storefront podcast studio at somebody, some newspaper called it that. And I was like, yeah, there you go. Podcast storefront. It's a thing. So do that. And stay tuned for early October for a big announcement here from all of us at Flash TV Talk, Panel to Screen, and even some more things. Yeah. All right. There you go. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. Bell, you ready to dive into it?
Let's jump into the Shangdown.
It's actually Shang.
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 Shang. Yeah. That's the hardest thing for me is like, I have a buddy who speaks Mandarin. Did you ever meet Aaron? He went to MC.
I don't quite. Possibly.
Maybe not. Anyway.
It's been a long time.
He, most aloof dude in the world, super cool guy. But like, he just decided one day he wanted to learn Mandarin. And so he just went to China. And
like you do.
No experience, no job, no nothing. Just went and learned it. And so we went to visit him, you know, a couple of years after he had been there to do the Trans-Siberian Railroad and also to see like Beijing and Shanghai. And so he taught me a couple things. Tonal languages are really hard for me. So I'm just, the reason I'm saying all of this is because I'm going to pronounce Shang-Chi wrong numerous times throughout this episode. And I apologize. It is not my intent to do so. But I am an ignorant American and I have no culture.
Yeah, and I'm dyslexic, so I'm just going to rest on that and not have to worry too much about it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man. Yes, we are talking about Shang-Chi, and let's go ahead and first address kind of our history with the character. Belle, how familiar were you with Shang-Chi going into this movie?
I knew that he existed.
Okay.
I think that was about it.
All right, that's it. All right. Honestly, man, I'm in the exact same boat, except for the fact I don't think I really knew that he existed. It was not a character I was familiar with in the slightest prior to the production of this movie. I remember when Marvel first announced they were making a Shang-Chi film, I was a little, I was a lot skeptical. I did not think, I was like, how on earth are they going to make such an obscure character into kind of an Avengers level hero in this universe? To me, it would be, I mean, if I can make a DC equivalent, it would be as if they were to introduce like Jonah Hex and say he's going to be one of like the top tier Justice Leaguers. I mean, it doesn't compute. It's like, this is a genre character that also exists in this universe, but doesn't quite have the same, you know, superhero level of, you know, placement, or at least what limited knowledge I had of the character at the time. But the great thing about having a character that doesn't necessarily have the, you know, the household name recognition is that you can get a little creative with it, especially a character that may have maybe not the most, let's just say maybe not an origin story that particularly aged all that well, I'm trying to be generous here, but you know, the great thing is when you combine that reality with the fact that Marvel really, you know, messed up with the Mandarin and Iron Man 4 or Iron Man 3, which I realize is an opinion. Some people don't think that's the case, but let's just go ahead and assume that it is. You've got a great opportunity here to re-envision and reimagine a character, a power set, and a lot of lore in a really creative and fun way for this universe, man. I was thrilled to get when they first announced the fact that not only were we getting a Shang-Chi movie, but that we were also going to be exploring the world of the Ten Rings.
So yeah, like I think I looked up what when they were doing all the Iron Man 3 promotional stuff and you're talking about the Ten Rings and whatnot. I think I looked it up and I think that's where kind of like, you know, I saw some of the earlier Shang-Chi like stuff and, you know, like Fu Manchu, his arch nemesis and things and right. And like the Ten Rings. And I remember there's like a comic book character and they were like finger rings at one point, right?
Yeah. So the Ten Rings, so Iron Man, his, you know, primary nemesis for quite some time in the comics was a character that went by the name the Mandarin, who of course was the original kind of bait and switch villain for Iron Man 3. And then also was eventually, you know, retconned into becoming Shang-Chi's father. Now, of course, in the comics, I don't even believe the two characters ever met. I don't know. I'm not as familiar with that comic, with his comic book story. But and from my understanding, they just weren't connected. So what they did here is they took the Mandarin and kind of combined him with Fu Manchu and turned into this kind of new imagined character that's really fantastic. And I think really added a good villain dynamic. You can relate with them. Like almost to a point where you kind of feel mad that they're not just sitting them down and having a conversation with them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And so they did a great job with this character. And yes, you are correct. In the comics, the Mandarin, his 10 rings are literally 10 rings, each ring having kind of a different power set, like one kind of controlling water and one controlling fire or shooting fire, if I'm remembering correctly. And I believe that those rings were connected to like perhaps an alien spaceship. Of course, in this film, the rings have kind of changed to bracelets. And I got to tell you, man, especially since we just spent a whole lot of time with little magical gems, I think this was the right move. I think it made him way cooler. The way that the power set worked, while very, very different from the comic books, looked incredible. I loved that whole like pressing down on the ground, like boom, like whipping yourself up into the air. And I thought it was pretty sweet.
So yeah, like I grew up with a lot of Jackie Chan movies. I did a biography on Jackie Chan a while ago, or not a while ago, but like when I had to do biographies, you know, in school. And so like I read about Jackie Chan, and like, you know, that got me interested in like Bruce Lee and Sammo Hung and like all the other people that Jackie Chan really like interacted with. And then Stephen Chow, who is also a great, like he does a lot of martial arts, like wushu style films. Those were like really popular in the 70s and 80s. They're like basically like martial arts fairy tales with magical powers and things like that, you know. And but Stephen Chow did stuff like Kung Fu Hustle, which you might have heard of.
Sure.
Shaolin Soccer and, you know, movies like that.
Yeah, Jackie Chan. I remember you were big into that.
Yeah. And I really liked those kinds of movies. And, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That's another like wushu style film with like, you know, just fantastical powers and martial arts and stuff. I love the choreography and the fighting and like, you know, Jackie Chan's like doing all of his own stunts and all this kind of stuff. I just really, really dug it growing up. I got a bunch of like old DVDs of like very beginning Jackie Chan movies, and they're really awesome. It's cool to see that in a Marvel movie kind of context, something that I would never have thought to see. And so, you know, having these like fantastical sort of rings and have them being like the arm rings, like there's a character in Kung Fu Hustle who has these arm rings, and like he's one of these, he's a tailor in the little like hovel that they live in, and he's like an old warrior or whatever, and now he's retired and he does tailoring. And like when the bad guys come, like he pulls down his these like they're like shower curtains or whatever that are holding up fabric, but they're actually his fighting rings, and he puts them on his wrist just like that. It's really, really cool, and it reminded me of all that. And they had sorry, I'm on a weird diatribe here, but just all to say I really liked the approach and how they did the rings in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it added to kind of the martial arts, but still kind of allowed for that supernatural. And then also just I say magical, but again, you know, there is a mixture of magic and technology with this character. And there is kind of, you know, with, you know, if it is, I think probably a safe bet that the rings themselves have some sort of alien origin. I loved how it was kind of an interweaving of all that. Now let's talk about this the martial arts there for a moment here. Early on, man, it's fairly clearly established that we're going to see some pretty significant martial arts in this movie. I've you know, seen some people really, really appreciated that, really appreciated, especially kind of that bus sequence in particular. But then some folks felt like there wasn't nearly enough martial arts in the movie, and that it kind of switched to being a little too CGI-esque too quickly. But what are your thoughts?
I really appreciated what they did. I thought there were a couple scenes that were a little too kind of shaky. Like when I watch martial arts movies, I like to see smooth choreography, not a lot of shaky cam in there, because you don't hide good martial arts choreography. And I think they did that for the most part. There were a couple scenes here and there that were sort of like shaky and whatnot for whatever reason. But I think for the most part, I really liked it. I really liked the fighting in there. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, I think. And I'll get to that when we talk about the end of the film. Beautifully choreographed film. I thought all the martial arts sequences were well done, with the exception of a couple having a little bit of shaky cam, more shaky cam than I would have liked. But like some of the camera pans that they were doing while they're doing the choreography was really, really cool. The bus scene, like I didn't know what to expect about Shang-Chi until I saw the trailer where they had the bus fight on there, and he's beating a dude, his jacket gets pulled off, and then like as he's beating up another guy, he puts the jacket back on. And I was like, okay,
that was awesome.
Okay, this is going to be that kind of movie. This is going to be like, there's going to be an emphasis on the martial arts, and there's going to be really slick and awesome choreography. And so at that point I was like, I'm sold. I think this is, you know, going back to my childhood roots of enjoying Jackie Chan movies and Stephen Chow films and like all of this really cool martial arts stunt work and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was satisfied with it. But again, I'll get to the problem that I had when we talk about the end of the movie.
No, like I think the marketing for this film was done fantastically. I mean, again, I was not that excited for this movie. But I think the combination of that trailer that you're talking about, that clip of like seeing him throw down, I was like, oh, okay. All right. I see where we're going with this. This looks pretty awesome. And then also the other factor, which was the question of like, okay, well, how is he going to fit into the grander universe? When we saw Wong fighting the Abomination in like a trailer, I was like, whoa. And can I just say, I walked out of this movie wanting the video game, man. That whole underground fighting like ring, that needs to be the video game promotional tool for this. And like, let me just go ahead and pitch it. Like, I want Wong as a fighting character. I want Abomination as a fighting character. Like, I want characters that typically don't get their own video games or don't get top tier video game, like, you know, play. Like, throw Valkyrie in there. You know what I mean? Throw in
it could be another stage. You could have the Shang-Chi stage that they fought at his sister's compound, and yeah, you have the one on in Thor Ragnarok.
Oh yeah, you could do a bunch of different stages. Like, a fighting game would have worked out perfectly as kind of like a cross promotional material for this movie. And I think, like, you know, anyway, I think it would have been awesome. You could throw in a couple of villains and anti-heroes. I mean, we're going to definitely talk about, you know, the implications for some of those characters that we saw, but let's stick to the core portion of the movie for this part. Let's talk about Katie, Awkwafina, man. She is us. She is kind of introduced as the outsider looking in, very much kind of the very Americanized voice and experience kind of being taken through the film. It reminded me kind of in a very similar fashion to Agent Bilbo Baggins from Black Panther, man.
Definitely an audience surrogate there. And another thing that I really liked about it is that, you know, she had her own agency and she wasn't just there as like a love interest for Shang-Chi. Like, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. That was good. It's always nice to see like some quality, co-ed friendships, or I don't know what the right phraseology there is, but yeah, that was good. Although I got to tell you, man, I was kind of shipping them a little bit.
So you were like the grandma at the beginning.
a little bit. I wasn't like that at the beginning, but by the end, when she's like, you know, they're kind of snuggling together, and I mean, like, hey, friends could snuggle together, but you and I have snuggled together.
Yes, because we're platonic friends, and exactly, that's what they are, and that's why. Yeah, but that's why I think it was great for her character to not be just relegated to the love interest. You know.
I know, but I mean, you know, it's somebody who married their best friend. Don't knock it till you try it. It can be a
sure. But like, you know, like Dr. Palmer in Doctor Strange, okay, she had an important role. Like, I love Doctor Strange. It's one of my favorite Marvel films.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And you know, she had an important role. Like, she helped save Doctor Strange and whatnot. But like, she was always kind of felt kind of relegated. She's like, you know, as this pseudo kind of love interest in his story, right? And I don't know. This felt distinctly different from that. It felt like,
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like, that's the thing. It felt like, you know, there was a genuine friendship there. And I mean, have you seen the What If Doctor Strange?
I watched it last night. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not an obsession, if you will, that you could see these two having for each other. There's more of a genuine kind of friendly, familiar love. And I think, I don't know, man, I know it's not the right thing. I know we're supposed to comment on how great it is that, like, oh yes, you know, male-female friendship that doesn't have to be romantic. And I'm down with that. I do agree with that mindset. That being said, they're cute together. I'm gonna side with grandma, okay? I'm gonna side with grandma. I'm not saying that they have to, like, get married or anything. I'm just saying they make a cute couple. Loved them, man.
I'm not saying they should get together, but they should totally get together.
Right? I'll be the non-politically correct voice in that for this. I think they'd be cute together. I loved them going to karaoke and, you know, just really kind of dealing with, you know, the whole adulting thing that you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, there's an interesting aspect of both of these characters. The movie as a whole really deals with, you know, what does family legacy mean? Like, who are you in relation to your family and that sort of thing? And we see that kind of play out in, you know, for, you know, the character of the Mandarin. We see that for Shang-Chi. We also see it for his sister as well. But for Katie, it's a little bit different. Katie is wandering aimlessly throughout life. And I mean, it's a very, you could argue, simple arc for her. And that's to some extent fine. She is a side character in the midst of kind of these, you know, more fantastic elements that are happening around her. But I have to tell you, the moment where she kind of gets her aha, the, you know, you miss every target you never aim for, or what it would, you know, I forget the wisdom that she was shared with. That spoke to me, man. I thought, I was like, you know, that's, I know that's like a simple resolution to her, you know, relatively undeveloped story, but I found it very relevant. I thought it was good.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, I thought that was really, really neat. It was, you know, she's kind of wandering amongst these godlike characters in these fantastical locations. And, you know, it's like, you never hit anything if you don't take a shot. Like, that was really poignant. And I think that hits home, you know, it hit home for me, and I'm sure it hit home for a lot of people. There's, you know, there's always risk involved in things, but you know, you're never going to know, do anything unless you try.
Right. No, yeah, I thought it was good. And I really, you know, she got the lucky shot off at the end, which, yep. saved the universe. good aim. Definitely good aim. Although I do feel like, you know, it'd be interesting to see where she ends up going with all of this.
So that's the thing, is I don't know enough about Shang-Chi's like ancillary characters in the comics to know if there's an analog for her character in the future. Like, I know there's a new run for Shang-Chi out right now. I haven't read it. I don't know much about it other than it exists. So I don't know if there's like a sidekick character or a partner character that they're moving her towards.
Well, she's a lot like Kat Dennings' character in Thor, right? Like, she's fun. She's comic relief. You know, like she had far more of a character arc than Kat Dennings did. But at the same time, like, you know, but I don't know, maybe a cross between that character and Shuri to some extent, because you do kind of see the dynamic that she and Shang-Chi have as something that is kind of special to the story and you don't really want to lose. You know, even when he's off avenging. So we'll see what ends up happening there. All right. So let's talk about the sister, man. Shang-Chi's sister, man, Zhai Ling.
Interesting, right? Like, I thought it was kind of neat how, you know, her father obviously preferred Shang-Chi to her, but she still felt like doing the training and stuff like that. You know, she wanted to do it and it was harder for her to get to where she was because she didn't have the support that Shang-Chi did. And when he left, that was like a huge turning point for her, right? Like, he was the only one who seemed to really, aside, like, once her mother died, right, he was the only one to seem to care for her. And you know, it took her 6 years of realizing that he's not coming back for her to like finally be like, all right, well, just doing it myself. And then she builds this entire empire, you know, for herself, which I thought was really, really neat. I liked the I wish I could remember the name of the weapon, the chain, the kind chain of the, part.
the throwy chain thing. Yes.
Yeah, that was super cool. Really like that. And I guess we'll talk about the ending stuff later. So we won't quite go into there yet, but
we're getting to it, man. I know you're chomping at the bit for it. But no, she reminded me a lot of was it number 9 from the Umbrella Academy?
Number 9 was,
or was it number 7? I can't quite remember what the kids' numbers were and everything, but violin, the white violin. It's like, oh, abusive dad, but abusive dad ignored me and therefore, you know, wanting to kind of like prove themselves. And you know, like, I just remembered very specifically the scene in which she's training to the side, and it reminded me of Vanya, you know, like when all the other kids are getting tattooed and she, you know, takes a Sharpie and tattoos herself. And you just see, like, you know, the kids are crying, but, and anyway, I love the layers of abuse, if you will. Like, I love the exploration of like layers of abuse that you see in this family, but you don't just see that. You also see that there are tender moments. You get, like, you know, them all playing video games together, them being a family together. The you know, we talked earlier about the fighting, and even when kind of the mom and the dad meet, their fight becomes dance, their dance becomes love, and their love becomes the children. And you know, you see that there's a complicated family relationship that exists here. Complicated family relationship seems to be something that Marvel's playing around with. I mean, that's always been something they've played around with, but even more lately with the Black Widow movie in particular. I hear you, man. I liked that she kind of, you know, the idea that she went out and created her own empire, that it was this underground fighting ring. We see that she is not a, you know, she's not necessarily a morally righteous person. She does have kind of this shades of gray to her, let's say. There's not, you know, the fact that, you know, it's a fighting gambling ring on the dark web. You don't necessarily see anybody kill each other, but you wouldn't necessarily be surprised to find out there are death matches going on. It does seem a little bit okay because we do get Wong showing up there like it ain't nothing. So,
well, I feel like it's not they're not in there trying to kill each other, right? They're trying to win the fight. And like maybe accidentally, I used too much of whatever power I have and I kind of killed this guy. Oops.
I think there's bodies somewhere in there, man. I think there might be some bodies. Right.
But it's like, you know, I picture it more of like backyard boxing or something. You're not trying to kill the other guy. You're trying to win the fight, but because you're backyard boxing in an unregulated environment, you know, with lawn furniture strewn about, and concrete patios and stuff, you accidentally knock the guy out and he falls over and hits his head on a concrete table and oh crap, I accidentally killed him. You know, that's kind of how I see it. Like I don't, you know, the organizers, they aren't going like, oh no, we got to call the cops now. They're going, all right, well, you know, just go put him with the rest of the bodies. But it doesn't seem to me like it's an organization that is necessarily looking to have each other, like having the fighters kill each other. Because the two big fights that we saw, Wong versus Abomination and Shang-Chi versus Zhai Ling,
right,
neither of them die. And victory is declared.
You're right. I mean, it's not the Grandmaster's arena for sure. Like it's not, you know,
no one's turning into Doug here.
I'm just saying that we hear from her during the fight sequence with the Ten Rings, you know, she's like, oh, did America make you soft? And then later on, when it's revealed that she's taken over, you know, rather than shutting down her father's criminal organization, she's taking control of it. I was not that surprised. I was like, okay. All right. I think she's not as bad as her dad, one imagines, but she's not quite her brother. You know what I mean? Like we do see that she's,
Well, when Shang-Chi said that, I was like, I'll believe that when I see it.
Right.
And then they cut to the scene and I was like, oh, what? Oh,
right. Now she's the head of the Ten Rings right now. I was actually talking to my sister about it. She was asking me some questions, and she was like, "I." She said she half expected Elaine to show up at the end and try to recruit the sister. And I was like, "No." Elaine is out here. Madame Hydra is out here trying to create some sort of Dark Avengers, like government-controlled Avengers. They would literally be going up against the Ten Rings, and so you could almost kind of see a Ten Rings versus the Dark Avengers, like her going up against kind of this whatever it is that Madame Hydra's putting together. I'll make this prediction right now. I think that we'll see that at some point. I think we're just seeing the beginning of the real Ten Rings, and what Zhai Ling is going to end up doing with the organization should be fairly interesting, especially because we've got this dark hero, kind of darker shades of heroes and lighter shades of villains in this kind of new phase of Marvel. So I'm excited to see where it all goes. Let's talk about the Mandarin. So as I mentioned before, man, this is their kind of attempt to retcon the character and make good on the mistake they made with Trevor, who, by the way, makes an appearance in this movie. Did not see that coming. Did you see that coming?
Didn't at all. When they were sitting there at dinner and Shang-Chi's dad brings up Trevor and like they talk about him, I was like, okay, well there's the tie-in, there's the mention of it, and it's gone. Like the assumption there being, okay, well yeah, he probably wasn't happy.
Brushed it under the rug. We're never going to talk about it again. See, there it is. Okay, let's move on. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the implication that I had right after the dinner was, oh, they killed him.
Oh,
they weren't very happy with him, you know, supplanting that. And since extremist dude's already dead, we're just gonna take out Trevor.
Interesting. Well, but so we knew. Did you ever see the All Hail the King short?
I don't know.
I believe that's what it was called. Now, this was years ago. This was after the pushback after Iron Man 3. People were like, that's the Mandarin, really? Like this is terrible. This is a great villain. Why does he end up being a joke? And so what they did was they had a Marvel short. I think they may even called it a one shot, and I believe it was called All Hail the King. And it was about Trevor in federal prison. And while he's in federal prison, some guys break in and basically say, you know, the real Mandarin knows what you did and he's not happy, or something of that nature. So the implication was that for us as an audience, Marvel knows what they did. They are going to make it right. And eventually we will see the real Mandarin. So this was kind of the making good on that. When he talked about being in prison and being busted out by him, they're actually referencing that, I believe, one shot.
Oh, okay. I think I've seen that on Disney Plus. I'll have to give that a watch. if I did see it, it was, I mean, that came out many, many years ago, right?
Oh yeah. It was yeah, very much.
Because
so.
They did a bunch of one shots. They did like Coulson, like a day on the job. Or
yes.
Like that.
Yes. But this was after those, I'm trying to remember where it was after those. I think it was one of the last ones they did.
Yeah, because they stopped doing them.
They did stop doing them. But anyway, so yeah, love the fact that Trevor was in this. I was shocked they brought him back in. I thought that was a great, great addition. And just kind of a fun way to, like, you know, to own it a little bit. To own, as opposed to like, just like, okay, this is the one thing we did. We screwed up. But look, it's better now. It's like, no, we're going to own it. We're going to own it from this go around. And also for people that did like that interpretation of kind of the Mandarin as a, you know, kind of a faux, or I just, it's not even that interpretation. It's really just the bait and switch. And people that really appreciated it about Iron Man 3, and I know there are some, it's kind of a way to validate them a little bit and not say like, hey, we're going to pretend like this movie you love didn't happen. It's like, no, this happened. And now we're incorporating aspects of that into.
And he was a delightful addition to the film as well.
He was.
I like from the moment he was there, he just felt like he should be there. Right. It was so much fun. He was a lot of fun.
So the real Mandarin, though, fantastic villain, loved the kind of the concept that he's kind of similar to the Ancient One. He's been around for quite some time. He was immortal while he had the rings. He was a very calm and controlled presence, even in the midst of his villainy. I got from him early on, and I did not think I would, but I got from him that this is somebody that, yes, can be a loving father. This is somebody who isn't, you know, gaslighting his wife or anything of that nature. It's like, no, this is actually, this makes sense for who this person is. And the scene that where they were playing video games, I mean, it kind of surprised me a little bit, like just how much I was like, okay, well, guys, talk to your dad. Like, clearly he's like, you know, you see that he's being lied to, like, you know,
they tried to tell him, like, that's not mom, like, that's not what's going on. And
yeah, but like Shang-Chi's like, I'm gonna go kill him. Shang-Chi, it's like, I'm gonna go kill him. And it's like, okay, well, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that though. He was a really complex villain, really well written. Like, you know, he meets his wife, gives up his rings to have a family. Wasn't expecting that at all. And then he kind of turns the moment she dies, because that was really the only thing anchoring him to being a decent human.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, at that point, I think, at least in Shang-Chi's mind, especially towards the end of the film, his father was truly gone at that point. Once, like, he takes the rings back up. Yeah. Like, you know, his mind was gone. He was trying to release this demon that he didn't really understand that he was. But they had that redemptive kind of thing there at the end. Like, you know, his father was trying to send Shang-Chi to go kill the man responsible for his mom's death. And ultimately it was him, right? Because of all the bad things that he did in the past, they caught up to him,
right?
But he wasn't willing to accept that. And I think he finally was at the end of the movie. I think there was a little redemption there for,
oh, for sure. And I like the fact that he gave the rings to his son, and it was kind of like the completion. His goal was always to some extent to do that, right? Like, you got a chance to see, he was grooming his son to kind of take over for him one day. But, and what, you know, what was ended up being kind of beautiful is that it was in a heroic fashion and not in a villainous fashion. And yeah, no, I dug it. I liked his arc. I just, I don't know. He's one of those villains that I would have been very happy keeping around. That being said, as I mentioned, his death opens up the doors for some very interesting storylines with the Ten Rings. So I'm just a little torn by it. I'm a little torn by it.
Well, you know, that's the signs of a good villain.
This is true.
You know, and I think he was a great villain. I think he was a wonderful villain, like very complex, very multidimensional, you know.
Yes.
Well-written,
yes.
Like, you totally get where he's coming from. You know, he was resigned to live the rest of his life with his family as a mortal person until his wife died. And the reason why his wife died was because of all the bad stuff he did in his past. And so, like, you know, that was his big flaw. Like, Thanos's big flaw was just, you know, he had the right idea, you know, that there's not enough stuff for everybody to go around. But, you know, his solution to that was to kill half the people, as opposed to, like, you know, snap your fingers and make twice the number of resources.
Oh, man. You know?
Snap your fingers and make a utopia, you know, like,
if only T'Challa had just had a simple conversation with them, then it wouldn't,
I know.
We need to do at some point. What if TV Talk is coming at some point?
All right. Have to handle those on a per episode basis, though, because I mean, there's a lot to.
There's a lot. It depends on where it all falls at.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, he was a great complex villain. Yeah, you know, it was sad to see him go at the end, but I think it worked well for Shang-Chi's character.
Yeah, no, I think it worked well for Shang-Chi. I think it worked well for his sister as well. Y'all, we're going to talk about that big battle sequence and then also the after credits and what all of that means for the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right after these messages. We are back. Okay, man, you've been just chomping at the bit to talk about the end sequence, the third act, the big final battle. My guess is you loved it so much. I mean, I feel like we've seen enough stuff now that I'm like, yeah, Bell's gonna hate this.
Well, I didn't hate it. It was disappointing to me. It turned into a kaiju fight. Like, kaiju fights are fun. Don't get me wrong, the kaiju fights are fun.
Sure.
But I was kind of hoping that the big end fight sequence would involve more of the title character.
It
made sense the way they set the story up, because the only way they were able to defeat the darkness thing beforehand was because the Great Protector came and saved them. I was hoping that might be some kind of allegory to where that title of Great Protector has now been bestowed upon Shang-Chi.
Like, he's now the new Great Protector.
Like, he is the Great Protector. Like, the dragon imbued, because like the dragon gave them gifts of the armor scales and stuff, right, that he's using in his weapons and his armor. They're all using that kind of stuff. I thought maybe there'd be something to do with the dragon, because the dragon gave them the power of the martial arts that they practice in the village. And so I thought perhaps there would be some kind of thing where like the dragon is weakened and it gives whatever remaining power it has to Shang-Chi, who is then able to become this great protector and defeat the evil on his own. That's where my brain was going. That's where I thought it was heading. And it, you know, just kind of turned into a kaiju fight at the end, and that's okay. It was still fun. It was a cool little spectacle. But like, I felt like it kind of diminished what they could have done with Shang-Chi there at the end, but you know.
Yeah. So I was hoping it was going to be Fing Fang Foom. I'm not going to lie. That was kind of a hope for mine. And so I was a little, I was fine with the whole Great Protector thing. I was like, okay, cool. Fine. The Soul Flayer kind of, you know, H.P. Lovecraft looking thing was interesting. Here's my criticism. I guess if I've got criticism about the movie, it really comes down to that third act. Cause for one thing, I mean, yeah, it was an okay, awesome spectacle. I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. I really was disappointed at how little like Shang-Chi was actually involved in the battle. Now I realize it's because like his story, his fight was really about him overcoming his father and his kind of acceptance of he is the combination of his mother and his father. I like what his aunt told him about like, you are, you know, take what they gave you and make it your own. And that's really,
Yeah. And you see that, right? Like, because his martial arts style adapts to his mother's and he uses the rings like his father, right? Like it was beautiful. It was really, really awesome. And then like he fights his dad and then the big demon pops out and his dad is eaten. And now it's a kaiju fight.
That's right. Well, I mean, and just to kind of take that concept further too. I mean, if you think about it from the standpoint of his father was very much kind of like power and offense. His mom was very much grace and defense. And you know, literally the tools that he has, the gifts that he has, the physical gifts that he has from both his father and his mother. His father is kind of the rings, which are kind of these attack weapons. And the mother is the dragon scale armor that he's wearing, kind of a defense weapons. And so you see kind of that yin and that yang coming together to really kind of form him both in kind of the physical traits as well as the mental and the martial arts as well. So yeah, I mean, I loved it, man. I think that narrative was gorgeous. I thought that it makes a lot of sense for the character. It makes for a beautiful story. And that part was great. And I think maybe for that reason, that's why the big battle at the end felt a little out of place. Because I think really all it needs to come down to is him versus his father, or him and his sister versus his father. But like the apocalyptic level problem that we're dealing with is in a pocket universe. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't even our universe anymore. Like, it's literally kind of this, a side dimension, not in a multiverse type of way, but in more of like a, you know, I guess like, you know, I guess like almost like the opposite of the dark dimension to some extent, right? Like where this is all going down. And I don't know. I didn't feel as though it was, they were saving their mom's home, which was good.
Yeah.
Good thing to do. Not saying it's not a good thing to do, but it felt disconnected from his storyline for me personally. And then the villain, like from that standpoint, you know, the monster villain, we didn't feel connected to it. We didn't quite get the full grasp of what this was. To my knowledge, this was not a character or a creature from the comics that has significant meaning. There's been a lot of speculation that I've seen around what it could be tied to or what it could be alluding to. The dragon itself, again, if it had been Fing Fang Foom, I think there would have been kind of an interesting way to explore some of the lore of the comics. And so you would have kind of even known there was deeper storylines going on connected to that. It's possible, by the way, that the rings might be calling out to Fing Fang Foom. That might be something that we see. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? But regardless, I don't know. It served mostly to give Katie and Chang like a story to tell their friends that's so like over the top and crazy. And so like it's almost like it was the setup for that punchline rather than like this big emotional battle that, you know, you kind of want at the end of a Marvel movie.
Yeah. I, you know, it's, there is, you know, a couple minutes of exposition about why this is bad and why we have to stop it. But yeah, it did kind of feel disconnected. You know, that's basically their last stand was that little pocket universe. Cause if he gets out onto Earth, he's going to eat all the Earth cities and it's going to be bad. But yeah, like, I mean, maybe they could have kept it in there by having something like, you know, the big evil dragon possesses dad.
Yeah. I hear you on the, once it gets to Earth, but I mean, you know, we do have Avengers for that. Like we, you know, it's, there's also additional powered people. I feel like, you know,
well, we don't know if their stuff could, I mean, like Hawkeye's not gonna be able to do anything to him unless they bring a bunch
like
of...
Wong could probably like show up and be like, snap, gone. You're good. Like,
yeah, Doctor Strange and Wong.
Wong for the win, baby. Like, yeah. I think that could definitely happen fairly easy.
Yeah, because, you know, it's all the dragon scale stuff was the only reason they were able to defeat the bad dragon.
Right. No, you needed the special. That was a great, by the way, with the razor fists, you know, like, we do not need your help. Like, okay, we will help you.
Yeah. Which that was interesting, too. I didn't see the turn with them working together. I thought that was kind of a nice thing there. Cause usually it's all, oh, we got to kill all the bad guys. And then it's like, friend of my enemy. Wait, no, enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. I didn't see that coming. That was kind of a nice surprise.
Well, and that, again, it speaks to the mother and the father, right? Like it's the mom's army and the father's army kind of working together to defeat this, you know, grander thing. And just the need, like, much like the children, you know, needed both of their parents to some degree in this, while also not relying holistically on that. They needed to make it their own. They needed to make their path their own. And I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. Let's talk about these end credit scenes though. Or well, any other thoughts about the final battle?
About the final battle? No, not really. I wish it was focused more on Shang-Chi and his family, yeah, as opposed to the big bad monster kaiju fight.
Yeah, I did not care about that dragon, man. Like, I didn't care about the dragon, and I didn't care about the Soul Flayer thing. I didn't feel the threat. Yeah. All right, so that's it for the final battle. Let's talk about these end credit scenes, because man, oh man. All right, loved the ending of the movie. Loved that Wong popped up and to recruit Shang-Chi again. It kind of adds to that joke of, you know, this epic adventure they went on. It sounds crazy, even in a world where people get snapped away like this. You know, your buddy is all of a sudden a superhero. You're just not going to believe it. And then Wong pops up into the restaurant.
He's like, I like how she was Chong? Like, I can see you're making fun of me here. This is not very funny. And then Wong shows up and they're like,
That was great. I loved that, man. They go off to the sanctum. Now, I will say this. I do wish that they had reversed these two end credit scenes. Because I felt like the one at the end, in my mind, the one at the very, very end should always be like the bigger one. And while it was cool to see the sisters taking over her father's, you know, organization, I feel like that would have been good to have right there at the,
I don't know, man. I think the mid-credit scenes have traditionally been the more bigger.
I know. And I don't like that. I think that's, I think the bolder play is to put them at the end. I wish they would do that. They did it at, I think it was like Thor 2 as well, where they brought one of the Infinity Stones to the Collector.
That was a mid-credit scene.
That was the mid-credit scenes. And then the very end-credit scene was the Snarl Beast or whatever it was just rolling around downtown.
Which was not a very big thing.
Which was not a very big thing, which means you waited for the entire credits to get basically nothing.
A nice little treat at the end. It was a funny little thing.
All right, fair enough. I mean, like, one way or the other, it's just me personally, I like it better when they reverse the two. But no, man. Okay, so we get in this. Let's talk about the Hulk in the room, okay? Or
yeah,
rather,
yeah, the non-green elephant in the room.
Yeah. All right. This movie probably did more for setting up She-Hulk than I think anybody imagined it would.
Yeah, you got Emil Blonsky as Abomination in there.
Who's chilling and is buddy-buddy with Wong.
Who doesn't seem like, yeah, he seems more like the later comic book versions where he's sort of like an anti-hero kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. This is not, this, like, obviously we haven't seen Blonsky. We haven't seen the Abomination in years, okay? It has been years since we have seen him. So obviously some things have gone down. His body is still kind of, or has over time adjusted further to the radiation, which is fine. I mean, to be fair, you know, it's not like the Hulk looks the same way he looked before. I don't even think it really registered with me at first until I walked out of the theater and I was like, wait a minute. He's not supposed to be Bruce. So, all right. I have seen a lot of different theories. I've got my own, but first I want to pitch it to you. Why is Bruce Banner Bruce Banner?
Man, I don't know. Like, at first I was like, wait, when does this take place? Mm. It's after the snap.
Mm-hmm.
Is it before?
He's got the arm sling.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was thinking at first. Right. I was like, wait, no, he's got the arm sling on. He's still healed. But why you put the brains and the brawn together and now you took him apart again. Like, what is this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So right. I don't know. Like, I don't know if he found a cure or if he can just like, just stay Bruce normal mode, then go into, you know, the professor mode.
That is what I think a lot of people are thinking, hoping, speculating. I've got a different theory.
Okay.
I think Shang-Chi actually takes place after She-Hulk. And I think what we are seeing is Bruce post blood transfusion with his cousin, with Jessica.
And so he loses.
I think when the blood transfuses, like if you remember in the original Incredible Hulk, right? Like he does the whole blood transfusion thing to like heal himself. Oh, come on, man. I know it's been a couple of years. You don't remember this?
You talking about Ang Lee?
No. The Incredible Hulk with American Psycho, not American Psycho, with American History X.
With Edward Norton?
Yes. With Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. No. It wasn't a blood transfusion. They use that flower or whatever to make a serum to turn him back.
Right. But they have to circulate his blood, right?
Yeah. They hook him up to like a dialysis machine.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think what we're going to see is something very similar early on in She-Hulk, where Bruce, for whatever reason, they're going to have to explain it, feels that the only way to save his cousin is through giving up his blood, like some sort of blood transfusion with her. And in the process, it's going to turn him back into Puny Banner. And she will then take on the Professor Hulk-esque form, which makes sense because that's She-Hulk.
And so he'll forever not be Hulk anymore and then she'll be She-Hulk?
I think he'll forever not be Hulk anymore and she will always be She-Hulk. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting.
But that's my theory. I think that's why he is Puny Banner now.
Yeah, it certainly has something to do with She-Hulk. It's got to have something to do with She-Hulk.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, are they gonna phase out Mark Ruffalo's Hulk?
I said Jessica. I meant Jennifer. My cousin's Jessica. Jennifer. Jennifer.
So, but does this mean like moving forward in Avengers movies, we're not going to have Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, or we're going to have She-Hulk? Or?
I don't think we will, man. I think he's going to be, I mean, like much like, you know, Steve is off the field, so to speak. I think, you know, Iron Man is obviously gone. We're getting more Thor, but honestly, the only reason that happened is because of, you know, kind of the reimagining that Thor Ragnarok did with the character, and kind of injected some new life into him. And so I think with all of our core Avengers, man, that they're all gone. Obviously, Black Widow's dead. Hawkeye's technically, I don't even know where Hawkeye's going to be, but he's like three times retired. So yeah,
and he's got a Disney Plus show that might actually kind of like, you know, close the chapter on his story.
Exactly. So I'm pretty sure, man, that we're really setting things up for the new Avengers to be the Avengers. And the more that we, you know, we're not sidelining these characters, we're retiring them. They're going on to, you know, kind of have their Thanos in the field moments, if you will.
You know? Yeah, they're going to their retirement planet.
Exactly.
Like, and then be killed by the new Avengers.
Captain America's on the moon. And the Hulk is just Banner now. And I think it actually works out really well, because if Banner is like literally Banner and kind of providing that, you know, mentor-esque role, that could be kind of cool. By the way, I love that we also got Captain Marvel here, and I loved the engagement between the two of them when she's like, it's like, oh, I gotta go, you get my number from him, call me, welcome to the team, so nice to meet you. And he's like, yeah, I don't have her number, and she does this all the time.
And her hair's different too, so like her hair was different from so this had to have taken place pretty much a while after Endgame, because she had like a short haircut during Endgame, and it was like shoulder length now.
Yeah, no, she's got the Black Widow superpower of hair letting us know what time it is. Where is this in the timeline? Okay, what color and shape is Black Widow's hair? All right,
yeah.
Good.
It's... Yeah.
But no. Yeah, I think, you know, part of that may be because they're not quite sure yet where her film's going to be. And so they don't want to end up setting up a continuity era, but they want to make sure that she's involved in some form or fashion with this. I think that made a lot of sense. Also, as I understand it, I believe that Brie Larson has some sort of connection with the director for this film. And so there was also kind of a desire to want to work together in some capacity. So that might be part of it. But no, I love that little interaction. I think it's kind of this nice combination of the new and the old coming together as well, with Bruce Banner being, you know, one of the older retired Avengers, and Captain Marvel theoretically anyway being kind of one of the newer kind of mainline new Avengers. So both of them welcoming in Shang-Chi into the circus, and along with Wong. And man, I love the fact that Wong got a lot of play in this movie.
Well, what was interesting too is that, like, the absence of Doctor Strange, right? There it was Wong, it wasn't Doctor Strange. So where's Doctor Strange? Why would Doctor Strange? I mean, like, maybe Wong was fighting in the pits for, you know, his own fun, but like, why was he not present in the Sanctum Sanctorus, the place he's supposed to be the master of?
Well, so that's a good question. It's possibly, you know, there's more things going on in the universe than one thing at a time. But yeah, no, I don't know, man, but I just love the fact that it was Wong. I also love the fact that we got the rings are calling out to something or someone. There's been speculation, perhaps this could be Galactus, and there might be some ties there. Given the fact the Eternals are the next movie, there's been some thoughts that maybe they might be connected to the Deviants or to the Eternals themselves. I'm holding out hope for Fing Fang Foom. I'm not gonna lie. I know there was, you know, it seems like Fing Fang Foom may have been the bones underneath New York in the alternate reality that was the Netflix series, but regardless, I don't know. I'm a little bitter, man. I felt like the previews and when they showed the dragon face, I was like, oh my gosh, they're putting Fing Fang Foom in this film. And I was like, I can't believe it. And then they didn't. So
yeah.
I just want Fing Fang Foom. I'm sorry. But
I mean, you know, it's an alien technology that's calling. I mean, that could be Fing Fang Foom. You know, he's an alien dragon guy. So I don't know. Like, I don't think it's going to tie into Galactus. I don't think that makes sense.
I think Galactus is going to tie into the Eternals.
Yeah. Cause that's more cosmic territory.
Yeah.
The Eternals is weird to me, like, because they're not members of the Avengers. They're just other people And like, are they gonna is this gonna be like a one shot movie? Are we gonna see more Eternals stuff? Are they gonna be in the Avengers like team up films?
I think that if I had to guess, I think this is gonna be similar to Rogue One, with kind of you know, a lot of these characters probably not making it all the way to the end. That being said, I do believe that one and or two, possibly three, will continue on as they're kind of their own heroes, to kind of launch into potential Avengers. Okay. Black Knight in particular, I think, is probably a safe bet, but we'll see what ends up happening there. It's definitely, you know, something for the future. I do think that the Eternals is going to be a big setup for Galactus. And if you think about it, man, like they can have some fun with kind of this universe and establishing Galactus in this universe. You know, you think about Ego and Nowhere and these celestial beings that we've seen already. It'd be actually pretty cool if they brought back Kurt Russell who played Ego.
Yeah,
it'd be cool if they brought him back actually for the Eternals as kind of a fun cameo, when they're kind of going back and looking at their history. But regardless, I think it'd be really interesting to see how they're going to interweave all this. But think about it, we potentially have upcoming man, we potentially have Galactus, we potentially have Dark Avengers, and we potentially have Kang. And these are like some of like the heavy hitters in terms of like, you know, your villains. Yeah. So phase four is shaping up to be a pretty, pretty big, a bigger sandbox than I think maybe we might have suspected early on.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, you know, so Dark Avengers is probably going to be like the first Avengers film. And then we'll step it up, probably not to Galactus. I don't know who they do in the interim, but like Avengers 2, Age of Ultron is going to be, I don't think Kang. And then Avengers, the next, I guess, two movies would have to be Kang. I think Kang's going to be the big bad, right?
I mean, obviously with the multiverse, I think the Kang is going to be the big bad of phase four. I think that Galactus might be more of a phase five type of big bad, with kind of the, if we make kind of those connection points there. But actually, you know what? I say that might be that Galactus is really, you know, we've been saying that Kang is the new Thanos, and that's not necessarily true. I think Kang is really more of like a phase long, villain to be sure. But I think Galactus is really more of that Thanos, that like epic level threat that requires literally the entire universe, because he's going to eat it. So, and also, you know, they've been very, very back end teasing, you know, Fantastic Four coming. And I guarantee that the Fantastic Four, like coming in and establishing Galactus, like, I think, you know, I think we could have Secret Wars. I don't know, man. It's just a fun time. It's just a fun time to be a Marvel fan. There's just so much that they could do, and it's the sky's the limit. They're getting creative. They're getting experimental. Shang-Chi is actually a really, really great example of that. And I think it's a great example of that working very, very well. So yeah, fantastic film. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah. I absolutely loved it. Normally the ending part that I complained about in a movie that I wasn't as infatuated with would probably bother me more, but this one was so, everything else was so much, it was so good that it just didn't bother me. But I'm at 4.5.
Oh, wow.
I love this movie.
Okay. It's very rare that you rank a movie higher than me. That's impressive. Okay.
Yeah. You were saying like how, as soon as you left the theater, you were thinking like XYZ. As soon as I left the theater, I was thinking about, when can I see this next?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's it's a good one. So go out and see it. Let us know your thoughts. You can, of course, check out the show at Flash TV Talk on the Twitters. You can follow Bell at Ring That Bell. All of our information can be found at flashtvtalk.com. By the way, guys, we've got a big announcement coming your way early October. What could it be? If you want to find out first before anybody else, join the Patreon, patreon.com/TV Talk. We will be dropping the info there before it hits the interwebs, but it will be hitting the interwebs, so stay tuned for that. Also, I will go ahead and mention this. I was probably going to wait a little bit longer, but I'll go ahead and put it out right now. If you would like to, we have got a Minecraft survival multiplayer server that we've been doing for quite some time called Flashcraft. And we are getting ready for the third iteration of Flashcraft, which is going to become something else, which we're also going to announce in early October. And if you would like to join us on that, if you play on Bedrock, if you want to play Minecraft Bedrock and join us for that, We'd love to have you. So just get in touch with us. You can hit us up on the DMs or contact us through the website. And we would love to have you you join as well. So there that is. Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week. But until next time, we'll be Shang-Chi-ing you later. Because, like, seeing you later?
Yeah, that's also bad.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.